Elizabeth Spires is a country girl from Wetumpka, Alabama. She went to Duke in the 90s. She tried her hand on Wall Street, and then she found big-time fame instead in the gossip industry at the Gawker blog, published by the English adventurer Nick Denton. Elizabeth Spires has just moved to New York Magazine to extend the art there. Elizabeth, Gawker became sort of the last word in Manhattan dish about, as you guys said, urban dating rituals, real estate porn, downwardly mobile iBankers, all that sort of serious stuff. Give me an idea. What's the perfect item for that kind of blog?
Well, I think, you know, part of Gawker's success is hinged on the fact that it's funny. And so the perfect item would be something along the lines of something a guy gave me a few months ago where he said, you know, a friend of mine was in Union Square and he ran into Bill Murray, and Bill Murray walked over to him and gave him a noogie and then leaned into his ear and whispered, "No one will ever believe you." And that's the perfect item to me because it's something that's going to get repeated elsewhere and it's funny and there's the celebrity element. So that would be my ideal. I'd like to get those every day.
Who reads you?
How
do you build success in that realm?
Actually, a lot of media people were reading Gawker because we did a lot of sort of media commentary, but it wasn't sort of Jim Romanesco style media commentary. It was always very, it had that comic element to it. It was a little irreverent. So that was, we had a huge media audience. And we also had a huge finance audience, which is kind of odd. We get emails from people in the industry I used to work in who were reading Gawker pretty religiously.
Gawker was known as a blog that paid. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, Gawker took me, you know, 36 to 40 hours a week to do. If it didn't pay, I really couldn't have justified spending that much time on it. Nick's intent from the very beginning, Nick Denton, my publisher, was to create these little micromedia sites that would be profitable and that where you could pay a writer to sort of do them. And, you know, at the rate I was getting paid, it's not that difficult to make the sites.
But where was the income coming from?
Ad sales, entirely. And, you know, I know that's, I came out of the dot-com era. I used to screen deals for venture capitalists. It's very easy to kind of scoff at that. But whenever you push the cost down to as low as they were for Gawker and also Gawker's sibling site, Gizmodo, it really makes a huge difference. And it's not really that hard to kind of, even just putting Google AdSense on the page, you're very likely to be profitable if you're getting the kind of page views that Gawker is.
But what sort of numbers are we talking about here? What sort of profits?
You'd have to ask Nick. I don't know what the numbers have looked like recently, but it is profitable. It's not the sort of thing that you'd want to turn into. When we started Gawker, Nick got a lot of questions about whether or not this was his first step toward being a media mogul. And I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I don't think you can build a media empire out of a single blog. I think you can run a very, a slightly profitable niche site, and I suppose if you have enough of them, it's a very good, solid, small business. It's not going to make you rich, but it can be profitable.
We think of blogs as creating communities, incredibly different kinds of communities. What is the little world that this hyper inside Manhattan dish create? And would you want to take this community home to meet Mama?
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It's kind of interesting because I think Gawker, most of the people that read Gawker don't realize it's a blog. So even though it does,
what do they think it is?
They just think it's some, or they don't know what a blog is. You know, most people are not familiar with kind of the blogosphere and bloggers, or maybe they've just recently kind of become associated with that world. Gawker got mainstreamed in a way that a lot of blogs really don't. So the community really was very Manhattan-centric. We did a reader survey at one point, and 40% of the readers were in Manhattan proper, which is kind of unusual. That's the community, and it really is media, finance-oriented. And as far as whether you'd want to bring it home to Mama, I think it depends. My parents are fundamentalist Christians, so not to my Mama, It's done very well for the audience that it was targeting.
I want you to talk about the trends that you see going on here, trends that would take a Duke girl from Alabama into the gossip business in New York right to the top, but also the proliferation of these niches. I have to tell you, I get all the New York gossip I want out of the New York Observer. What's the trend that has put this kind of thing suddenly onto blogs?
Well, if you have media people reading the site, part of what, you know, sometimes the stuff that you're reading in the Observer is a derivative of something we did in Gawker. And I know that because I have friends who work at The Observer.
Yeah.
And they got
it from The Times and The New Yorker.
Right, right. Well, sometimes. What ends up happening is that you have a bunch of media people kind of reading each other's stuff and then reappropriating it. And that's sort of, that, you know, the whole function of blogs is that you are, in a way, reappropriating other content. But what's happened with Gawker is that you find other people sort of on a secondhand basis reappropriating Gawker content. So you really kind of become an influencer in that space, whether you planned it or not. And that's kind of interesting.
In all the talk, where does the snarkiness enter?
You know, I think that's what kind of differentiates the site. You know, you have a lot of people talking about the same issues we do, but, you know, very few of them do it in such a way that it's funny or irreverent. I think The Observer does it, you know, and for a long time, I think they sort of considered us competition in some twisted way, even though, you know, they have this huge readership, and we have a good online readership, but I think they're very different publications from the standpoint of The Observer's very Upper East Side oriented, and Gawker tends to be downtown hipsters. But the tone was very similar. And I think that's part of the reason why they have a readership is that, you know, people love that tone. And that was, you know, just a way for Gawker to kind of stand out in a sea full of blogs and, you know, news sites and whatever else you have out there.
What did you learn from the experiment, the Gawker Stalker, in which readers were just encouraged to spot anybody and let us know instantly?
That was kind of an interesting experiment because all my friends who are gossip columnists moaned and groaned that they hated it, you know?
Right.
Or they just thought it was stupid and boring and nobody cares that, you know, so-and-so was seen on the corner of house and then whatever. But, you know, we started it not because Gawker really isn't. If you actually go and look at the content, look at the ratio of sort of celebrity-oriented content to everything else, the celebrity content is actually very low because we're only doing basically two features a day that would feature, you know, anybody that was a celebrity and then maybe one additional post about Vincent Gallo or the Hilton sisters or some, you know, running theme. And that's out of 12 posts a day. But those things tend to stick in people's minds, which is why people, you know, consistently refer to Gawker as a gossip site, even though on a content basis, it isn't if you're thinking about gossip in the Hollywood celebrity sense. But we wanted a way, or, you know, I was getting emails through, you know, we had an email address at the top of the site that said send tips to tips at Gawker, but the amount of inflow that we were getting was really kind of, or it wasn't low, but I felt like it could be better. And one of the ways to kind of augment that was to do something where readers could submit stuff and they could see it on the site pretty quickly. And, you know, it would just sort of reinforce this idea that if you're sending us stuff, we are reading it, it will make it on the site, you know, if it's good. And so that was kind of the whole function of Gawker Stalker. It was a way to make it a little more interactive with the readers without putting comments up, because at the time we weren't sure that we were going to use comments. It's definitely worked from that perspective. You know, the amount of incoming email that I got increased exponentially.
Elizabeth Spires, now you're going to do it at New York Magazine, Clay Felker's magazine from the 1960s, a magazine that started out with the Herald Tribune publishing Tom Wolfe, Gail Sheehy, Norman Mailer. What would Clay Felker make of a blog in New York Magazine?
You know, I think he'd like it, actually. I think the original iteration of New York Magazine did so well, I think, because it was in some ways just edgy and really kind of new. And it, you know, I think it's great that New York Magazine has been so enthusiastic about doing a blog. And half of them, they have no idea how to do it from like a technical perspective, and they don't really know how it works. But they saw Gawker, they liked it, and they wanted to kind of appropriate something similar for the site.
Have you got a name for it yet?
Yeah, I think we're going to call it The Kicker. Or that's kind of the working title until somebody gets sick of it and changes it.
And what's the ambition?
Well, it's supposed to just be a sort of companion to New York Magazine. The topic areas or anything that New York would originally cover, with the exception of the sort of service journalism, because that's more time intensive. But anything that would be typically a New York Magazine topic is fair game for the blog, you know, and that's everything from politics to finance to, you know, some of the celebrity element that would complement the intelligence or gossip column. So,
how many people will contribute to it?
Right now, just me. I mean,
wow.
I'm writing the blog. Ideally, there will be a component that complements the gossip column, wherein staff members who are going out to events will submit postings about, you know, where they went, what they saw, and they'll be edited by me. So, I mean, I guess that there will be some other contributions, but I think, you know, right now we're taking its live.
What's the level of humor, consequence, seriousness, poetry, style that you're shooting for?
Well, it's supposed to be a little snarky because that's kind of my voice. That's what I got recruited in to kind of bring to
the snark queen, you've been called. Should we define snarky?
I think it's this sort of, it's basically irreverence, and different people define it different ways. Heidi Julewicz from The Believer has been on this crusade for a while, her anti-snark crusade, and I think she defines it a little differently. She defines it as sort of gratuitous meanness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
that's
not accurate. It wasn't accurate for Gawker because it was supposed to be biting, you know, but not in any sort of mean-spirited way.
Snark as in shark, that is.
Yeah, sort of.
But that's still the goal.
Yeah, basically. When they recruited me in, it was because what they told me was sort of, we like your voice, we think you're funny.
I like your voice, and I look forward to working with you at BurgerCon, Elizabeth. Give my best to Bill Murray.
I will.
Bring him with you.
Oh, sure.
Let's have some fun. I'm still trying to learn just where this blogosphere is, how the blogosphere works. Do you have a sort of working code of your own about what new world we've entered?
Well, I started blogging in 2001, but I was familiar with Blogger software about a year earlier because I was still in the tech industry, and I was looking at content management systems for a while, and I was just an early adopter, and so I started a blog for about a week in 2000. And then just stopped doing it. And then I picked it back up in 2001 and kept doing it consistently. And I remember even in 2001, it was still fairly new. And you had these sort of communities of bloggers that were tended to be a very topic-centric thing. You know, you had a cluster of political bloggers and then a cluster of sort of tech bloggers that included the developers of the various soft, vendor tools.
Right.
And there didn't tend to be a lot of overlap. You know, they weren't cross-linking each other or having these sort of discussions. And now I find that there's, it's sort of spread out a little bit where you have, you still have these topic-focused blogs, but there's much more awareness of who else is out there and doing this, and partially because blogs have gotten so much play in the press in the last year or so.
Who's your favorite?
I tend to like the funny bloggers. You know, I like Neil Pollack's blog, Bunsen, this guy in L.A. who does these sort of fake celebrity postings. This other guy, pardon my language, Dong Resin, who goes by that pseudonym, has a really funny blog. So I read those pretty religiously, and a lot of my friends have blogs, so I read those.
I'm a big fan of the Julie Julia Project. I'm sure you've read it.
Yeah, I saw that, and it sounded like a really kind of interesting project, and I think that's probably one of the best uses of the medium that I've seen. I don't read her blog specifically because I don't know how to cook.
You don't have to. You just have to enjoy kind of very spirited young writing.
Yeah, she's a good example, I think, of people crossing over. I think she just got a pretty nice book deal, and that's great. You know, if you have publishers and editors who are sort of looking at blogs as a way to kind of find new writers.
She deserves every dime of it. Elizabeth, I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. We'll have some fun.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye.